97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
You know who I have not had the privilege of speaking to in a while? That's the governor of Missouri, Mike Parson, and he's going to join us this afternoon in the 5 o'clock hour. This is the execution night for Marcellus Williams to finally leave the planet, and hopefully this will all take place. I don't think the United States Supreme Court will get involved, but we'll explain that case and talk about, really, Lisha Gale, who was the subject of a brutal murder. And I don't really like to mention Marcellus's name because she was the victim, and we're going to focus on her a little bit here after 5 o'clock. Kat Rosenfield is with me right now. She writes at the Free Press, and if you're not subscribing to the Free Press, you don't know what you're missing right now, but wrote a piece that I saw last week that kind of fascinated me, so we invited Kat to join us this afternoon. Kat Rosenfield, how are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So the name of the piece was "To the Woman Who Trashed Me on Twitter," and you tell this fascinating story of a woman that you call Jane, not her real name. But you got to go back in history just a little bit to back in 2016 when Trump was first running for president, don't you?
Yeah, Jane was a colleague of mine, and around the time that Trump became the nominee for president, as I'm sure you know, a lot of people who worked in media where I'm situated kind of lost their minds a little bit,
and they continue to.
Yeah, just a tad. It got very censorious. It got very kind of fraught to be on the side of free speech, which I always have been, a free speech liberal. And those of us who were still willing to talk about being in support of free speech were sort of excoriated in public, but in private we became these sort of like secret confessors, and our Twitter DMs and inboxes became like a little confessional for people who weren't actually very happy with what was happening, but didn't want to say so on main, didn't want to say so out loud because they didn't want to be canceled. And Jane was one of these people who used to message me and say that she was concerned about the climate, that she was concerned about her career, that she didn't like what was happening. And that went on for about 2 years. And then it stopped when she decided instead to kind of publicly attack me for being problematic.
So you even had, again, not a real name, but you talked about her. She was a colleague and you guys had freelance gigs at the same time. And she wrote, "I'm trying to tell myself every day that this censorship, hypersensitivity, et cetera, is the natural exuberance of a new movement still feeling out its own limitations. I spend so much time every day now wondering if my peers actually want to suspend the First Amendment or are just angry, emotional posturing." So that happens. And then 5 years later, explain, you write an article about COVID, right? And then you hear a little bit from Jane again.
Yeah, I had written about the campaign to push Joe Rogan off Spotify, which I thought was potentially problematic in terms of what it implied for free expression, the First Amendment, free speech. And then I discovered that Jane had taken exception to it and was just sort of publicly trashing me on Twitter with another podcaster who I also will not name. And, you know, the thing about this experience, it was obviously it's very unpleasant to discover that you're being stabbed in the back by somebody you considered a friend. But the thing about this that I think is more important than what I personally went through is that a lot of people have had a similar experience to this, because we do live in a moment and did then and do now where people are very opportunistic and very tribal and willing to sacrifice trust and connection in order to participate in this very binary thinking.
It's amazing. So, but why, Kat, why not just say, "Hey, Jane, F you, I'm going to release your DMs," and this is what you were saying. Why even try to protect her at this point? I'm curious.
I just want no part of that paradigm. I think it is incredibly toxic and incredibly ugly, and I'm trying to be the change that I want to see in the world. So, yeah, I won't be naming her.
I can appreciate that, and I understand that. But you also related this, and I don't know if it's just because she's got the same name as you, but you related this to something that you read in Kat Timpf's new book, right? Explain that.
Yeah, that's right. Timpf, who I've actually been on TV with a couple of times. I think people enjoy the novelty of us having the same first name. she has written a new book. Everyone should check it out. It's really wonderful, very funny, very vulnerably and well-written. It's called I Used to Like You Until. And she talks in it about this trap of binary thinking that leads people to disassociate from their friends, their confidants, over politics. And what she's identifying there is the same phenomenon that I have written about at the Free Press before, which I call fandom politics. She calls it binary thinking. But the point is that it's very tribal, and it is something that has been ascendant, I think, for the last 10 years or so, but it's gotten especially potent. It gets especially potent around elections and around this one in particular.
Yeah, and I don't know how we get out of that. I was thinking about this even this week with a friend of mine. I have a pretty, used to be a good friend that still works for CBS News. We go way back to journalism school at the University of Missouri, been friends for decades. And he didn't like what I was saying on the X, formerly Twitter, a few years ago. And essentially, I mean, we were relatively close, and then that was it. It was like done. There was no conversation or anything like that. And unfortunately, there's a lot of that going on right now. It's probably going to go on again this Thanksgiving at people's homes.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that it's probably true. You were saying, I don't know how we get out of it. I don't know how we get out of it either, except by individually choosing not to participate in it. And so I still maintain friendships with people who I disagree with politically and will continue to do so. Well, and hopefully leading by example will work.
Yeah, and I think, look, and I've said this before as someone who is more libertarian conservative. Most of my friends are not libertarian conservative. They're more liberal. And, you know, I kind of deal with that. But I'm curious about your thoughts on how the media is handling a lot of these situations right now. I played a soundbite from Hillary Clinton yesterday where she's defending Kamala Harris not doing interviews because apparently it's somehow sexist to demand that a female presidential candidate actually talks to the media. But there's a lot of stuff going on. One of the reasons I love the Free Press, because I think Barry's done a great job over there with real journalism, Kat, and I don't see that a lot in the rest of the so-called capital J journalism world out there.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with you on that. I mean, I, of course, very partial to the Free Press. I work there. I think we're wonderful. I think that there are a number of good journalists working in mainstream news organizations who are still doing a good job, who are unbiased, who are objective, and who are doing their best to remain open and to get the truth out there. But when you mention Hillary Clinton, I think it is very interesting, actually, that you can trace the rise of a lot of the sort of tribalism. Again, this is something that Tim talks about in her book, back to her basket of deplorables comment that she made on the campaign trail in 2016. And a very interesting thing that happened then was that people on the other side allowed themselves to be defined by that comment. They were like, you called me deplorable? Yeah, I'm going to be hella extra deplorable. I'm going to be so deplorable it makes your hair stand on end. And that kind of reactive, almost oppositional, defiant behavior where you allow somebody who treats you with contempt and with loathing to sort of define who you are and who you choose to be is something that Tim talks about in her book and I think is part of what makes this so toxic. So everybody basically has to opt out or it's just going to keep getting worse.
I love, by the way, you use a quote from Kat Timms in her book and she says, it's pathetic, but it's true. Politics makes us fight with the people we actually know on behalf of people who don't even know we exist. That says a lot right there, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a terrible thing about this binary trap is that it has us at each other's throats. So much of the culture war stuff that we fight about with our friends, with our family, all of that is a distraction from what is actually happening. And it is to the benefit of people who actually have power, who could be making the world a better place and who are let off the hook for doing that because they would prefer us to be fighting with each other rather than looking at what they're up to.
You're probably right about that. Kat Rosenfield, thank you so much for jumping on here with me in St. Louis this afternoon. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right, take care. We would definitely disagree on the media and the way that the media is handling all of this, because I don't even think that that's in question right now when it comes to fairness. And I do love the Free Press because Barry, and by the way, Barry Weiss is no conservative. She left the New York Times not because it was too liberal, but because they weren't interested in truly acknowledging all sides of issues.
Wow.
And this came, you know, with the Tom Cotton op-ed that they wanted to spike, and that's the circumstances of how she left. But overall, Kat's point is also, I think, a little broader on that spot, because we all get backed into our corners. But I think that the corners would not be as extreme if the media landscape was more fair.
Agreed.
Because one of the reasons that we're so tribal is you got the conservative you know, punditry world, Fox News, used to be Rush Limbaugh, shows like mine, right? And then you have everything else on the other side.
Yep.
And there is no effort to, well, we used 60 Minutes as an example earlier, right? And it's sad because we used to be able to think that 60 Minutes really stood for something, that they were going to go. Mike Wallace is a great example. When Mike Wallace was one of the correspondents on 60 Minutes, he would give everyone hell, right?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter who was sitting next to him. He was going to ask tough questions of that person. Consequences be damned, right? But we don't see that anymore. I don't see the intensity being in an equitable way dispersed across. Of course it's not, right? So I think that the media and the way that they've become tribal, because they're cheerleaders, they're forcing agendas, they're not interested in telling both sides of the story. Look, Joe Biden today mentioned climate in his speech to the UN 6 times. He only mentioned Iran twice. You know, in a fair media world, the New York Times, the LA Times, the Washington Post would do a story about that saying, wait, maybe we're a little off on our priorities here. But they won't do that because they believe the climate science nonsense and the junk. And they want to stuff that down people's faces and, you know, down their throats. And that makes everything worse because you got the NPR audience believing one thing. You got the rest of the people believing another thing, which is usually the truth. And there's nowhere in the middle that people can meet, sadly. We're coming back with more in a moment. Hang in there.
Get more at 971talk.com.